Particles of Resentment. The SS Mullah School in Dresden and Islamic Anti-Semitism.
During the Second World War, the Waffen-SS developed from an ideological and military unit made up exclusively of German soldiers into a multi-ethnic army. Many Muslims fought on the German side during World War II for a variety of reasons. Often it was a common conception of who the enemy was. Or there were more pragmatic forms of collaboration that led Muslims to join the Wehrmacht or the SS. Altogether, the Wehrmacht had 6 legions with a Muslim majority, while the SS had 3 divisions, a brigade, and a Waffenverband, or mixed unit whose members were for the most part Muslims. The Muslims fighting in the so-called Eastern Legions of the Wehrmacht included Azerbaijanis, Crimean and Volga Tartars, North Caucasians, Bashkiris, and Uzbeks. They were recruited mainly from Soviet prisoners of war. Serious war crimes are known to have been committed by the Muslim Bosnian Waffen-SS units during the so-called partisan combat in the Balkans. SS headquarters permitted the involvement of imams, the Islamic prayer leaders, in the individual battalions and promised that Islamic dietary rules would be respected. Compliance with Muslim funeral rites was also granted. As a result, each Muslim unit got a mullah, an Islamic preacher or clergyman, as an advisor. As a rule, however, the Muslim army clergyman had to be trained first. As a result, in November 1944, an SS mullah school was founded in Dresden, especially for Muslims from the area of the USSR. Within the SS, they were organized into an East Turkish and a Caucasian Waffenverband.
The two authors of the feature about the SS Mullah School are in conversation. They are engaged in research about the cooperation between Muslims and the National Socialists and about today's Islamic anti-Semitism.
I can't get any further. I just can't find any sources on the SS Mullah School in Dresden. Apart from this article at Shoah.de, there isn't any literature on the SS Mullah School in Dresden. No films or photographic material, no autobiographical reports. It's as if it never existed.
At least this article says that there was an SS Mullah School in Dresden from November 1944. It was founded on the initiative of SS leader Heinrich Himmler. So-called Russian Turks were trained there before going on to serve in the SS. The institution was based on the association Arbeitsgemeinschaft Turkestan e.V.
The Arbeitsgemeinschaft Turkestan e.V. had 2 addresses, one in Berlin and one at Taschenberg 3 in Dresden city center.
You could argue about the effect of an SS Mullah school for so-called Russian Turks founded at the end of 1944. It seems to me that the Arabic shortwave stations broadcasting, for instance, from a place called Zeesen to the south of Berlin were more important and influential. Political scientist and publicist Matthias Künzel writes, "It broadcast a daily Arabic language program to the Middle East since 1939. No other station enjoyed a greater degree of popularity than this Nazi station broadcast from Zeesen between 1939 and 1945. Here, anti-Semitic tirades were interspersed with quotes from the Quran and Arab music. Program highlights at Radio Zeesen included calls to jihad by the most popular figure in the Arab Islamic world of the time, the Mufti of Jerusalem, Amin el-Husseini, who lived in Berlin between 1941 and 1945. Nobody promoted hatred of the Jews among Muslims more successfully than him and influenced the early history of the Middle East conflict at the same time."
The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. Okay. He is mentioned in connection with the Dresden SS Mullah School. The known facts are very limited, however. The existence of the school is proven by 2 sources. Parallel to a diary entry of Viktor Klemperer, there is also a quote by Titus Lenk from a telegram in which Grand Mufti Amin el-Husseini thanks Himmler for the foundation of the SS Mullah School on the 27th November in 1944. I quote, "On the occasion of the opening of the Imam Institute of the Eastern Turks in Dresden, another sign for your great interest in Islamic German cooperation, I would like to express the sincere gratitude and best regards of the Muslims.
Matthias Künzel writes here that this form of cooperation between National Socialists and Muslims had already started as early as 1937. The trigger was the suggestion made by the British Peel Commission to divide the Palestinian Mandate territory into a small Jewish state and a larger Muslim Arab state. He goes on to write that this plan immediately led to protests by the National Socialists. They postulated, "The formation of a Jewish state is not in the German interest, but rather a strengthening of Arabism as a counterbalance to the increasing power of Judaism."
What did Heinrich Himmler and Grand Mufti Amin el-Husseini have to do with each other? Oh, here, Künzel again. Heinrich Himmler enthused about the ideological bond between National Socialism and Islam. He also introduced the term Muselgermane. And el-Husseini pointed out the ideological similarities between Muslims and Germans. These were said to include obedience and discipline, the will to battle and the honor of falling in battle, community, family and offspring, the glorification of labor and creating, and relations to the Jews. The Mufti declared, "In fighting Judaism, Islam and the Nazis are coming very close to one another."
But things weren't always like that. While Christian anti-Semitism is characterized by the idea of a supposed Jewish threat, Jews in the Islamic world are treated with nothing worse than condescension. In the eyes of the Muslims, the idea that Jews, of all people, could possibly become a danger to them or to the world appeared absurd.
Oh, well, that would mean that the racist anti-Semitism and, above all, the hallucination of a Jewish world conspiracy were of European origin and were exported from Europe to the Arab world.
Well, and today, more than 60 years later, we have to deal with a dangerous situation, which is described by anti-Semitism researcher Robert Wistrich as follows. There is a culture of hate which has, in the meantime, come to pervade everything. Books, periodicals, newspapers, sermons, videocassettes, the internet, radio and television throughout the entire Arab Middle East. Contemptuous images of Jews and Israelis can be found everywhere in political public life in Islam. They combine the myths of ritual murder from medieval Europe with the conspiracy theories of the Nazis and slanderous Islamic quotations about Jews as being sons of monkeys and donkeys.
Despite all this, one can still read here and there that a solution to the Middle East conflict might possibly weaken anti-Semitism in the neighboring states.
Yes, that is one line of speculation, but hatred against Jews goes way beyond the territorial conflict between Israelis and Palestinians. Isn't this anti-Semitism driven by another motive, as Robert Wistrich writes, by the delusional idea that history is dominated by the wicked intrigues of the Jewish people? And no story is too absurd for it to be believed and spread.
And another popular part of the picture is that America is in Jewish hands. To continue with Robert Wistrich, the jihad for the worldwide liberation of the Muslims from oppression and injustice is therefore at the same time to be seen as both an anti-Jewish and an anti-American struggle. And somewhere else, Wistrich describes the anti-Semitic hysteria of the Islamists as paranoid distrust against the modern secular civilization.
Yep. However, what is also interesting is that a special understanding for the anti-Semitism in Arab countries is being shown in Germany today. Again, Matthias Künzel writes, "The distinctively unconcerned attitude towards the Islamist hatred of the Jews is significant for the German discourse. While anti-Semitism articulated in German public provokes indignation, the same anti-Semitism, when articulated by Muslims, is seen as a response to the Middle East conflict and thus trivialized or completely ignored."
Aha. And this silence about Islamic anti-Semitism also includes staying silent about its origins in National Socialism.
Keeping quiet is very popular here. On the other hand, rumor-mongering is also very popular. One common trend in the Arab world is the equation of Israeli politics with the National Socialist crimes committed against the Jews.
And can't such comparisons be heard over and over again in Germany too? Terms such as war of aggression, war of annihilation, total war, and Palestinian ghettos. In my opinion, the Nazi comparisons offer a welcome possibility to come to terms with the uncomfortable German history. If one makes the descendants of the survivors of the Holocaust into perpetrators today, it comes as a comfortable form of relief for the German descendants, because the level of guilt can be reduced if the former victims are today cast in the role of perpetrators.
The rejection of guilt and longing for relief has many faces. Some thought it a good idea to compare Sharon with Hitler, and others cannot stop persistently claiming there's racism in Israel. Still, others are magnanimous enough to allow Israel its right to existence. Just a second. Here, I marked a passage that points to this doubtful concession from the essay Forgiveness by Vladimir Yankelevich. Anti-Semitism is a grave offense against human beings in general. The Jews were persecuted because it was them and not at all because of their opinions or their faith. It was existence itself that was denied them. They were not reproached for professing this or that. They were reproached for being. To a certain degree, this refusal extends even today to the existence of the State of Israel. It is an immense concession, an unmerited gift that is believed to be conferred on Israel in according it the right to exist. As if that recognition were not the elementary and vital right that every human being ought to respect in every other human being. And this without negotiations of any kind, without any claim to gratitude.